Is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play. Welcome, welcome.
Welcome back, everybody.
Oh, man, welcome back. We got a super special guest today.
Listen, oh, yeah.
For everyone who's an interventional radiologist, maybe interventional radiologist quarterback, but every quarterback needs a great offensive coordinator.
Oh,
we got one of
yes.
the greatest offensive coordinators on earth. We got Ron Fisher, interventional radiologist extraordinaire. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm here fine and ready for you guys.
We appreciate you making the time. Excellent, excellent. We know you've been coordinating for many, many years. So take us back to X-ray school, man. Tell us, what was your toughest class in X-ray school?
Toughest class in X-ray school. You know, we sort of pre-interviewed that right before the podcast started, thinking about it. And to be I did not have a tough course in X-ray school at all.
Listen, I love it.
Listen to that. Killing the game. Killed everything.
I actually did. When we go back to high school and prior to going to college, I was sort of like C, B student.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But by the time I got to something clicked in X-ray school. I really liked it. And I found it so interesting I couldn't put the book down. So I pretty much made A's and B's. I got awards and president of class. I did pretty well in X-ray school.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool.
I can't remember getting I'm sure I didn't get a C at all. I sort of averaged like a 3.5.
There you go.
Wow. That's awesome. That's great. That's really good. So a lot of people say physics kind of tripped them up, man. So this was kind of, it was nothing for you.
Physics, I like physics. I actually like anatomy and physiology.
Mm-hmm.
I did some other things after X-ray school. Initially I got an X-ray to sell X-ray equipment. So I took some business courses later and, accounting, statistics, economics. Now those courses were difficult. I sort of struggled there. But
why is that? Was your interest level changed that you didn't?
Yes,
you
were really into? Number one, I was working and it wasn't science. You know what I mean? It was a bunch of numbers and math, and it wasn't related to the X-ray beam. You know what I mean?
Wow.
That's so interesting. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So you had a whole vision for yourself before you even started X-ray school. That's awesome.
I did. But prior to going to X-ray school, when I came out of high school, I wasn't working, and the D.C. police force called me and wanted me to be a police cadet.
Okay.
So that was my first job coming out of high school. I was a police cadet. I actually went to the academy, became a police officer, and did not like being a police officer.
Wow. I didn't know. Why not?
It's the early 70s.
Uh-huh.
Right after Martin Luther King riots, and it just wasn't a place there for me. You know, I did it about 3 years and then I went in the Navy.
Wow.
I actually went on furlough from the police force to go into the Navy. So I was expected to become, go back to the D.C. police force once I got out, and I decided to go to X-ray school instead.
That's funny. They're still waiting on you then.
I worked my way through X-ray school as a security officer for the Smithsonian Institute.
Oh, nice. Like you kind of, were you like at all the museums or just?
No, at the History and Technology Museum, which also did some X-ray diffraction.
How fitting.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
And I sort of went down and played in the lab a little bit. They use X-ray diffraction to identify crystals, because when you bounce the X-ray beam off a crystal, it gives a signature, and it'll identify that particular element gets its own signature.
And this is next level. I love it.
But I went to medical x-ray after that. I mean, that was real hard. It was too early. Had I gotten into that after I'd been in the hospital, I may have hooked on to it, but I like working with patients.
Well, tell us a little bit about your experience in the Navy. Because you did some interesting things in the Navy.
I did. I was on an aircraft carrier. And I was attached to a fuels division on the aircraft carrier. So I did a lot of fueling of airplanes. That got me pretty much athletically situated. Plus, I'd done some things on the police force as well prior to that. Mm-hmm. And I boxed in the Navy. I boxed for the Navy.
What? That's awesome.
I was PAD to the boxing team. So I don't know. I'm something like 18-3 before I got out. But
there you go.
So good.
Awesome. You got some fast feet because Rod will tell you some other things he does. You know, this guy, he's a professional.
That's really cool. Very nice. Well, so take us back. So tell us where you're from, where your family's from, where you grew up.
I'm from Washington, D.C. I grew up here. Grew up in northeast and southeast D.C. prior to, my mother went to hospital. And I didn't know my mother had a mental condition, so she had to go. So me and my brothers were sent to foster care.
Oh, wow.
So I spent 10 years in foster care prior to finishing high school. And I came out of a foster, a little place called Junior Village here in D.C. And they got me one room. I was actually working at George Washington University Hospital back then. That was while in high school.
Wow.
I was working at Central Sterile there.
I see. Wow. So you kind of got introduced to the hospital early.
Right. But from there, I ended up being a police cadet.
Yeah.
It seems to me, Ron, whatever was put in front of you, you could do it. I mean, we haven't even gotten far yet, and you've been an athlete, a boxer, with an awesome record. You know, you're learning physics and you're learning, science with ease.
Yeah.
I really liked X-ray. I wasn't a super student in high school or even in college after X-ray. I actually went to GW after I finished X-ray school for a while. But I like money too. I mean, I grew up kind of poor, so I'm the oldest in my family. I had to take care of my sisters and brothers for a while. Youngest.
Wow, with a whole lot of responsibility at that.
I think just even before that, just being in the foster care system and finding a way to navigate yourself to success is that's unbelievable. So that's major accomplishment to even get to a place where you can take, go to X-ray school, become a police cadet. That's awesome. So sounds like the Navy was a positive experience for the most part for you. It sounds like
pretty much. It was during the Vietnam War, so I was afraid to be honestly afraid of being drafted into the Marines. They didn't have a Navy, so I knew I wasn't going to have to go fight in the jungle.
You calculated that out very well.
Definitely. So if I had to do it all over again, plus the Navy paid for X-ray school.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's really good. So now, tell us, did you, when you were in X-ray school, it sounds like you already had the plan to sell X-ray equipment. Where did that idea come from?
That actually came from the business aspect of it. X-ray was only a 2-year stop, I thought. And it was at that time, it wasn't what it became later.
Okay.
There was no CT, there was no MRI.
Mm-hmm.
Ultrasound was fledgling, just getting started.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't there wasn't these opportunities. Actually, there was no real IR. IR was like called special procedures. And it wasn't really a field. There wasn't a lot of doctors like Dr. Howard that went to a program to learn how to be an IR physician.
Mm-hmm.
Physicians that worked in special procedures were regular radiologists.
Right.
Who tired of reading film and you know, decided that they're going to do something extra on the side. And at X-ray techs, we did the same. It was an opportunity to make a little bit more money. You didn't get paid anymore to be a special procedures tech. You got overtime. So,
oh, I see. Gotcha.
That's how I got into IR.
Gotcha.
I got to ask you, and I think I may have asked you before, working together, we talked with a technologist who she has like 40-something years in the game. Did you use a Bunsen burner to shape catheters?
We did.
So that was a lie. Did. She didn't tell a lie. Okay.
We did. Yeah. Oh, we did it. It had a bottle of an oil that was ignitable, and it had a wick. And you lit the wick and you held the catheter up over the heat, and you made the curve with your finger.
Wow. This is ridiculous.
OG. Yep. We got another OG.
Oh, yep. Oh man.
All wax, man.
Oh man, I love it, man. Like that's so cool. Like, so like, can you tell like a timeline? Like was this happening like while you were doing the procedure, or like before the procedure, or like when were you doing like this manipulation of the catheters, I guess?
It would happen during the procedure.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean?
Crazy.
You would have a wire in the patient, and the physician couldn't get the catheter to go where he wanted it to go.
Mm-hmm.
So he would leave the wire in, slide the catheter off, take it to the Bunsen burner, put a shape on it, and go back in with back in over the wire and try to get it to go where he wanted to go. It's just like how Dr. Howard and I work together. Mm-hmm. Just how you pull the wire out, put a shape on the tip, and put the wire back in.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day, they were doing that to the catheters.
And you were responsible for the shape.
No. I was responsible to get the Bunsen burner going.
I see.
But I feel like you're also responsible. I was going to say, you're also responsible for the nursing, too. Like, you're, like, trying to make sure the patient's doing okay this whole time as well.
There was no nurses in IR when we first started.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, man.
Remember, sometimes we really had sick patients that needed nursing.
Right.
Those patients would come from ICU. Mm-hmm. And the nurse that was with the patient in ICU would come down to the radiology suite with that patient and be that nurse during the procedure.
Gotcha.
But for outpatients, for patients who weren't as sick, they came off the floor. Yeah, I had to do the nursing care.
Man, that's a lot.
I'm 10 milligrams of value.
Knock them out.
Yep. They didn't even remember having a procedure.
Oh, man, I love it, man. This is awesome. So tell us, so where are all the places you worked when you got out of X-ray school?
When I first got out of X-ray school, I started at Sibley Hospital. I worked there for like 8 years.
Okay, okay.
I was there on the evening shift initially, doing pre-op film for the next day and, working the emergency room. They needed someone to be in specials. So I transferred to the day shift and almost immediately went in the special procedures.
Gotcha.
We come in the morning, we do myelograms early in the morning, and then upper GIs and lower GIs mid-morning. And about 1 o'clock, we start doing special procedures, and we go till about 7, 8, 9 o'clock.
Wow.
So you did that every day?
Every day. And we did a lot of negative studies. Because remember, there was no CAT scan. So if you had the worst headache of your life, you had a cerebral angio.
Right. Oh man.
So we did a bunch of negative studies.
Right. But that's practice. That's volume. You know, like you need to learn experience. That's 10,000 hours real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So like you never like second guessed yourself. Like every time like something like this came up, you're like, I'm, you know, like the opportunity specials came up and you're like, I'm going to do it. Like never had it like any hesitancy. You know,
it was the challenge, you know, back then, you know, we had film, we had Shonander, we had the X-ray beam, and we had the injector, and everything had to go off at once. When you hit that button, everything had to be set. You had positioning, and you had biplane X-ray tubes. They had to be in position. Your film rate had to be down, and your injector had to be ready to go. So that, I guess the challenge of that was,
that's complicated.
Hitting that button, man, and everything going off it at the same time, and for it all to come out right
was right. Probably. oh man,
a lot of responsibility there. But what I'm picking up on too, Ron, is you know you've had a lot of confidence. Like you weren't afraid to dive into new things, different things, and make decisions to lead you on different routes. Where'd you get that confidence?
I'm not going to say that it came like, you know, like snapping the fingers. It came with success. Once you hit that button in the film and you're in a dark room running all those film, number one, and you come out and they've got it all displayed in on view boxes and you did it and it worked. You know what I mean? And if it looked good and you know everybody's giving you these praises, hey, nice job.
Yeah.
That repeated over and over again probably builds the confidence. Because there's a lot of anxiety associated with hitting that button at first.
I bet.
But the anxiety turned into confidence after doing it for a few years.
There you go. Reps, because I know some of those radiologists that you're working with. If it didn't work out, they got a finger ready to point it.
They you know, they didn't treat each other well back then. Didn't do a lot. You know, they spent a lot of money for their education. So
right.
They wasn't willing to, at that time, they weren't willing to give it away to you, the older radiologists.
Yeah.
They weren't willing to give it to each other. Mm. But as the younger guys came in, they needed more help. Mm-hmm. But they allowed you, if you had the intelligence to help them. And then it became like more like it is today. We sort of work together, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Team aspect.
Yep.
And you have you kind of have the advantage of seeing the technology change because you know what the technology was before and you know like what the new technology is supposed to be doing. So right. Yep.
I have. I actually I think in 82 I started doing CT as well. CT came around. And
okay.
I went to CT and I did that and IR together for 20 years.
Wow.
You ought to see him now. So, he'll be in the room with me in the fluoroscopy room, and then I got to do a CT biopsy, and here he comes running moving the CT technologist out of the way. And I'm thinking, well, Ron, when are you going to sit down? I call him Dr. Fisher, man, because he can help you in a bind on many occasions. Yeah, I told him one day, I said, man, you know you're making me a better radiologist, right?
That's right. That's awesome. That's super cool. So tell us. So it sounds like you were at Sibley for a while. Then where else did you go?
Sibley. I left Sibley and I went to, where did I go? Oh, wow. I got an opportunity with the Virginia Neurology Center. They wanted to turn the regular townhouse into, it was like a townhouse complex where their offices were. Uh-huh. And over the offices, they had another townhouse and they wanted to make a small CT suite.
So they what?
Yep. They bought a little CT machine called a CT Max.
Okay.
and we put it in. I designed the the dressing room, the dark room, the CT room.
Wow.
The waiting room. We hired a bookkeeper, and it was me, a bookkeeper, and one other tech.
Oh, and man.
I worked there probably for like 3 years until the Stark Amendment came out.
Can you explain that for us real quick?
Yes.
Okay, the Stark Amendment was passed in Congress, and it said that no doctor could invest in a lab if he had a financial interest in that lab. He couldn't refer patients to that lab.
Yeah, you just can't refer patients to like something that you own to like get the money back.
They tried to snow it by putting the lab in my name.
Yeah, Dr. Ronald Fisher, exactly.
Yeah, I actually went and put the lab. I went to City Hall in Alexandria, and I signed up as the owner of the lab. And they, of course, they put up the money, but I mean, they got scared. You know what I mean?
Because
what they were doing was they were referring to patients, and they owned the lab.
Yeah. Now that law was made for them.
Yeah,
it's literally made for them. Oh man, that's funny, man. So you went and designed like a whole CT center in a townhouse. This is crazy.
I did.
Wow.
When we closed down, they gave me a little piece of money. I didn't work at all for about a year after that. I called myself a consultant.
This is hilarious. Wow. So what year was this?
This was I went there in 88, and we probably closed down in like 90, 91.
Wow. Okay. So you took a year sabbatical, got paid, kind of like
I didn't go back to work until like 92, 93.
Wow.
So what made you go back to work?
Boredom.
Yeah.
I had taken a job with, boredom, probably money. I got tired of making deals. I would make a deal with like the in an industrial park in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And, I would tell them that I would get them, find x-ray techs for them, but I would fill in x-ray tech started. So they would pay me $10.99. And I did that for a little bit over a year, and I just got tired of it. I wanted to settle somewhere. So I actually took a job with radiation physics. And I was working on
what?
Shooting x-rays and doing EKGs out of a truck.
What?
Yeah. That for a whole year till winter came. It was cool for a year though. I mean, when the weather's good, I just get up, get on the radio. Where do you want me to go today? I would go shoot my x-rays, do my EKGs, and then I'd bring it into the office and run it. Then they'd send me out for the afternoon and come back in. Of course, that got, I was going to do that forever.
Yeah,
the traffic alone.
Back into the hospital in probably, I think, 92, 93.
Okay.
Southern Maryland Hospital.
I worked
there, ET and IR, for the next 17 years. So the backup CT tech and the IR supervisor there.
Very cool. That's awesome. I'm sure you did some, you know, you've seen the technology change, doing some new procedures, learning a bunch.
Oh, yeah. I did. I thought I was going to just do CT for real, because what happened was IR's technology changed. There was a drastic change when we went from film to DSA.
Mm-hmm.
Because an IR tech at that time, his skill level was the positioning, was the fact that he could push that button and everything went off at the same time and everything came. Now I don't have to know positioning if I'm doing fluoro. You know what I mean? I don't have to know technique, because with DSA, you know, the technique is adjustable. You know what I mean? So I was working with a guy now. He's running Dr. Levy, Elliot Levy. I was working with him, and I asked Dr. Levy, I said, Levy, man, what am I going to do now? With this, you know what I mean? They'll find a spot for you, Ron.
Oh, nice.
He's down at NIH now.
Gotcha. Oh, that's cool, man. So when would you say this, like, kind of transition to DS, you know, to like digital basically happened?
This probably happened in maybe 96, 98, something like that, between 96 and 98.
Gotcha.
It came in slowly, and mm-hmm. it was crude at first, and it got better fast.
Yeah.
It got better quickly. And almost immediately, film was an afterthought. And it happened throughout radiology. Digital just took over. There was, you know, even the x-ray techs stopped mm-hmm. at one point. And I don't remember when it happened for them. I was doing IR by the time that film went away completely.
Gotcha. Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. So this was 17 years at Southern Maryland. Wow. Okay. And what was your next step after that?
Next step after that was Fairfax. Oh. Inova Fairfax Hospital.
Oh, you got some stories about Fairfax.
That's probably where I learned the most.
Okay.
I thought that I was an experienced IR tech. I thought there's nothing that you could teach me until I went to Fairfax.
Yeah.
You know what? I know the culture there is, it can be a bit intense, or at least that's what I'm told. But what do you feel like you learned there? I mean, I'm sure it was a lot, but
okay.
Was it a culture where they were cutting edge, or what was the big difference?
The big difference is, yes, they were cutting edge. There wasn't anything that you would do in IR that wasn't done at Fairfax.
Mm.
Fairfax is the hub of five conglomerate hospitals. You've got Fairfax, you've got Mount Vernon, there's Alexandria, Loudoun, and Fair Oaks. That's like, they have almost the whole of Northern Virginia. And Fairfax is the fulcrum. You know what I mean? That's the big center. And all of the rest of them are satellites. Like at Mount Vernon, they actually specialize in orthopedics.
Mm-hmm.
The other four hospitals are community hospitals. But if they have a patient that's bad, they send them to Fairfax. You know, Fairfax, they'll immediately, I mean, I did some satellite work at Fair Oaks from Fairfax. And if I had a bad case, I'm getting ready to prepare for it, and I are there, and the nurse says, no, it's too tough for us, we're going to transfer this patient to Fairfax. Now, when I worked at Southern Maryland in CT, for example, we would find patients who had aneurysms. And at that time, there was no coiling of aneurysms in the brain when I worked at Southern Maryland. We sent the patients to the OR, and a neurosurgeon clipped the aneurysm.
Yeah.
That was what was happening to aneurysms back then. When I got to Fairfax, this guy is in an IR suite coiling an aneurysm.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that transition must have been crazy.
Oh my God, man, that drove me nuts. You remember, I'm a CT tech. I would have known. I would have seen the star formation and the artifact off of, you know, a pile of coils in somebody's head. And I had never seen that before.
Oh, that's super cool. That's, I mean, it's like you have the perspective to know how amazing what is happening is, you know, because you've seen what was happening before.
Yes. That was brand new. And then there was penumbra and pulling a, you know, a clot out of somebody's heart. I mean, out of somebody's brain. That was brand new and fresh. You know what I mean? That been done. Somebody would have a stroke. Normally, when I grew up, you know, you've seen folks who had suffered strokes and they were, you know, crippled on one side, and you don't even see that much as much anymore as when I was a kid. You know what I mean?
Right. Now,
if you get to the hospital in time and they put you on TPA in within 24 hours and they keep that clot soft, we have the tools in IR to go up there and get it out. So that you know.
Wow.
That was new. And we did just a lot of other things in there that we don't do at Kaiser, but I mean, I call myself semi-retired now. You know what I mean? After 40-something years, I came to work 20 hours a week part-time.
Wow. Well, you've seen everything, though. I mean, that's it sounds like it kind of keeps you excited, like the fact that, like, new technology kind of keeps you, like, you know, motivated to come and see, like, wait, what's the new thing that's going to be happening? And that, you know, that makes the days funner and easier for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I started Y90 there.
Yeah, we started radio embolization, and Ron jumped right on that, man. He was ready. It actually invigorated him, and he's been such a vital part of the team. And, his experience level is just, it's great. It's great what you're able to add.
Absolutely. Oh, man, this is a whole history lesson. This is so awesome. Like, this is, all of these changes have happened, like, in your, like, you know, career. You know, you went from like making catheters like on a Bunsen burner to like, you know, seeing people pull out clots like in the brain, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Tell us about your hobby. The hobby that you, for which you have national recognition.
Well, no, I in 92 I went to a this is all social now, social. I went to a dance contest, we call cabarets here in Washington. And I'd done some swing dancing in high school.
And of course you have.
Yeah. I'm that old, you know what I mean? It was the 60s, and I didn't do well. So I took some lessons at a local club here from a guy who was actually really good. And I started swing dancing, and I started competing. I started winning.
of course you did. I have
a room full of trophies for our local swing dance here in D.C. Called hand dancing. But now there's a national level dance called West Coast Swing.
Okay.
I got into that probably like seven, eight years ago. And I've been doing that, you know, pretty regular ever since. And that it's a worldwide endeavor. They have they call it the World Swing Dance Council. They have rules. They have a method of of categorizing what level you're on.
Yeah, like the scoring and everything. Wow, this is
So I am registered as an intermediate West Coast swing dancer. I went from newcomer to novice to intermediate. And I'm really close to being advanced. I'll probably be advanced by the end of the year.
There you go. He's always working on it. Always working on it. Doing pull-ups. This guy, Ron, are you gonna share your age? you don't have to share your age, but I think, go ahead.
I turned 71 in January.
71, but I don't feel like this man ages. He's doing pull-ups on a pull-up bar in between cases. I'm not lying to you. I don't even know 20-year-olds that can do pull-ups. This man is in shape, always looking for the new wave, how to, you know, get better, get stronger. And I mean, your story, man, it needed to be told. I'm so happy you're here, from being a boxer to, you know, in the Fox, it's just crazy. So,
yeah,
you've done a lot, you've accomplished a lot, you've adapted. What was the most difficult thing that you faced on your journey thus far? And how did you get through it?
Oh, come on. You know what that is, man. That's that, you know, I mean, I can't change the color. That's been somewhat of a battle when I mean, when I first got to Sibley, we're talking about, this was 1975 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we hadn't quite, I had a surgeon who became my friend later on. You know, he's dead now, but he was, you know, he was somewhat of an asshole then. Mm-hmm. I go up to the OR to shoot a flat plate of the abdomen, looking for making sure he's in the gallbladder.
Mm-hmm.
I walk in, he looks and sees a black guy, and he says, "What happened? Did X-ray come from Harlem now?"
Wow.
That's what he said?
Wow.
That's in front of all them people. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. You couldn't, but you could.
I held on, but I didn't lose it. You know, it's been somewhat of a challenge, but, you know, I guess I like to say I'm just a little bit smarter than average.
Mm.
Yes, I have just a bit above average intelligence. So,
nah, but you know, like, you know, they say just enthusiasm increases your IQ by like 30 points. Just being enthusiastic about something. And you have that. Like, you know, yeah. Like the fact that you're enthusiastic about things, the fact that you're excited to learn new things.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like you're never like intimidated. You're just like, let me learn how to do this. I like this. I'm going to try it. You know, and that basically, I mean, that translates. I mean, that's better than anything. You know, they say the best stability is availability. You're always available to do something. So that's awesome that you've been able to do that. And, you know, those little comments, you know, it's whatever, you know, you're a trailblazer. You know, you're a trailblazer. You're going in there like, yeah, I'm blazing trails from Harlem.
Right. A lot of great things came out of Harlem. But how did you go from how did you respond to this surgeon?
What happened was he had a patient who was very, very heavy. I mean, and he needed that gallbladder shot again. And the guy must have been, 400 and something pounds?
Mm.
And he had two or three techs come up and couldn't get a picture. And he said, "Look, go get that black guy from Harlem."
You showed him your greatness. Get it, Rob Fisher.
And showed him his gallbladder.
Yeah.
I never had another problem out of Dr. Bowen.
Yeah.
All I did was doubled up the exposure on the machine. I turned up maximum and hit it twice.
Did you tell him his comment was messed up? Don't come at me like that.
No, I didn't. I never did.
Yeah, it's all fun and games, so you need something done.
I heard that.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome, man. We've learned a lot. This has been awesome. Yeah. This is a history lesson right here. Wait, real quick on the swing dancing. Like, so where have you traveled to with it?
I've been to Montreal. I've been to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm.
Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Charlotte, North Carolina.
Man, I love it.
Burbank, California. Jesus. Oh, man. A bunch of them here locally.
Yeah. You're just racking up awards everywhere. World famous.
Yeah. I'm telling you, that's what I said about those feet. He's got good feet. He's got fast feet.
He got their feet work.
Boxing to dancing. Man can do it all.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So tell us, what would you tell someone who's like kind of struggling, like, you know, to make it through like high school or like X-ray school to like kind of help them get through? What would you tell them?
Don't give up. I mean, you know, X-ray is easy. It's fairly easy. If you're struggling, try to figure out what everybody's trying to accomplish. Mm. You know what I mean? What's the end goal?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can figure out what the end goal is, and then you can map your way to how to get there, you don't need to take notes. You know what I mean? It's going to be in your head from now on. Mm. That's sort of how, you know, how I've approached almost everything in IR. Mm-hmm. Where do we try to go? What's our ultimate goal?
Yeah.
And what do I have to do to get there? I need this, I need that, I need, you know what I mean? I strategize, and that's how I get to it from point A to point B.
Yeah.
What's it going to take to get me to where I need to go?
I love it. That's great advice. That's
how you stay focused.
That's how you do it. Oh, man, I love it, man. This has been awesome, Ron. We really appreciate you making the time, man. This has been really good. Yes, thank you so much. And thank you guys for listening. And until next time, stay low and keep firing.
Okay.
Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you get your pods.
I mean, I started when I was working at a Southern Maryland. Southern Maryland was owned by one doctor. And Caramani, he was the last of the doctors that own hospitals here in the D.C. area.
Okay.
I worked with him prior. He was a surgeon at Greater Southeast.
Okay.
And he married a lady who owned property at the shopping, the mall in Oxon Hill. And she gave him a piece of property. He put both a hospital and a hotel on that property.
Wow.
Good at dance was I would go to the hotel early in the morning, work out, then go to work at the hospital, which was walking distance across the parking lot, come back to the hotel at lunchtime, do a little bit more working out, and then go teach and practice dance after work when I got off.
That's awesome.
That's how I really got, to be honest, that's how I got good. It was an athletic endeavor for me.